Great to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Last week, during an interview about youth activism, President Obama called out youth culture.
You know, this idea of purity and you're never compromised and you're always politically woke and all that stuff, you should get over that quickly. The world is messy. There are ambiguities. But I do get a sense sometimes now among certain young people, and this is accelerated by social media, there is this sense sometimes of the way of me making change is to be as judgmental as possible about other people. And that's enough. Like if I tweet or hashtag about how you didn't do something right or used the word wrong verb, or then I can sit back and feel pretty good about myself because, man, you see how woke I was? I called you out.
The president talking about the sort of ego-driven call-out culture where people feel good about themselves by criticizing other people publicly. But that particularly is a problem among American youth, where kids often will be publicly criticizing others for saying something they think is appropriate, sort of a way to be the school scold. Well, how does this play out, and what effect do we think this is having on young people? Styles reporter for the New York Times, Sunaim Yar, joins us. She writes about youth culture and social media. Her latest piece is Tales from the Teenage Cancel Culture. Sunaim, thank you very much for being with us. Now, what have you been hearing from Times readers about the prevalence of this in schools?
Well, happy to be here, Larry. I think it's interesting, looking at the comments section of that article, there's a big spectrum. You have a lot of people who are kind of saying, on one hand, oh, like this isn't really a new thing that exists. Bullying of some form has always sort of existed and been pervasive in high schools, but now it's sort of under a new name. That's like one common thing. And then I think something else that a lot of people have been bringing up is actually this seems in some ways positive in that it's kind of empowering and it's good that high school students aren't really standing for, you know, people using slurs, and they're calling out their peers who are, you know, doing kind of exhibiting problematic behaviors and that kind of thing. So it's been a mix.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because what you've got, it seems, is instead of people talking to each other individually, there's a kind of a grandiosity about doing it publicly. So not only is it an effort to try and stop the person potentially from saying or doing something, but it's a self-aggrandizing thing, right? Because then you're the cop, because then you can show you're the one who's so attuned to what's right or wrong. It's a self-righteous play.
I think that definitely varies. In some cases, that's probably true. That definitely is an aspect of it. But I also think in some cases, what like me and my colleague who worked on the piece, Jonah Abramich, found was that in some cases, they weren't really declaring it publicly. Like there's one example where there was a student who was playing an R. Kelly song, and the person we interviewed was talking about how she asked him to stop playing the song. He said no, he didn't really care. And then she just kind of kept it to herself. And then she just like told her friend kind of in passing, you know, this person is canceled to me. So it wasn't like she was making a public declaration on social media, like this person is horrible, he did this thing. It was more like a mindful thing for herself and that, okay, she's not going to really associate with that person in the future. And, you know, she just mentioned it in passing to her friend.
Yeah, and that wouldn't seem to be any harm in that. You'd wonder why she'd bother saying it to a friend. But yeah, there wouldn't seem to be harm in staying away from someone you feel is inconsiderate. How would that be different now than how that would have been done in the past?
It's a good question. I think one of the biggest differences we sort of found was that the things that the slights, I guess, or the perceived sort of moral wrongs that caused the canceling, if we want to phrase it that way, these were things that maybe the students wouldn't have discussed or called out in the past, period. So someone playing a song by an artist who has a really problematic history. That's something a student might not have raised her voice about before, but she felt empowered to make that statement now, and that was the biggest difference.
And the question, I guess, would be whether it's a judgmental thing, like, you shouldn't be playing R. Kelly, as opposed to, it bothers me because I have negative associations with him because of the allegations. Those are kind of two different things, because if you're telling someone you're wrong for playing R. Kelly, that's kind of a judgment, like you're being the police, like he has no right to do it, as opposed to its consideration thing, saying, you know, would you really turn that down to where I can't hear it or not play it because I find it, you know, that offends my sensibilities. And do kids draw that distinction?
I think it definitely depends. In a lot of cases, it was coming from this social justice perspective where they were saying, you know, these are things that the other kids should be educated on. They shouldn't be using, you know, for example, a slur, or they shouldn't be playing that song. And I tried to make them wise to that. Most cases, they were not perceptive or receptive. But yeah, I think it was coming from a place of, like, we should all be educated on this. And
educated being code for think the same way about it. Right?
Yes.
All right. We'll continue our conversation with the New York Times Styles reporter, Sanaim Yar. I'd love to hear examples, if you're a parent, of how you've seen this play out, this sort of call out or cancel culture among young people in high school and middle school. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We'll be back in 1 minute. I always love that expression, if people were just educated, or let me educate you on it, meaning you better think the way that I think, that's the moral high ground. I'd love to hear how this plays out with your kids, or maybe if you're a recent high school graduate, you have thoughts about it. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We're talking with Sanaim Yar, who's Styles reporter for the New York Times. Her most recent piece for the Times is Tales from the Teenage Cancel Culture, seeing how this plays out among young people who cut off contact with their peers or who publicly criticize their peers for doing something that they think is morally wrong. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. Norma writes on the page, the call-out culture is turning my kids into libertarians. I kind of get it. Some of the call-out compassionate, in quotes, or empathetic, in quotes, are very rigid in their thinking. That's all fine and good, but at a certain level, we have to come from a respect of right relations. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Sanaim, do you have any idea how school administrators and teachers deal with this, if they tend to at all?
That's actually a really great question, and it's not necessarily something I can speak to. I think from my understanding, it's been kind of playing either via social media or one-on-one conversations. So with the people that we spoke to, teachers and that kind of thing were never really involved, as far as the students said.
Samuel in Encino says, I'm from Israel, where we tell each other whatever we want, and we also leave each other alone. Americans love to be the cops of the world. I do think there's another youth aspect to this, though, because and I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, because you're a lot more plugged in on this than I am, Sanaim. But young people, you know, being a young person is inherently, there's insecurity that goes with that. And the idea that you find certainty in the world, that you can, that you, there's sort of a roadmap to making what are these sort of what's righteous, what's not, what's acceptable, what's not. I can change the world by judging other people in this way. It's very hard for young people to avoid falling into that, because it does provide a kind of psychological relief. What do you think about that?
I think that's definitely true. I mean, there are some examples we had where we spoke to the people who were on the receiving end of being canceled, and they talked about how it felt for them. It was really, you know, psychologically isolating. They didn't have any friends. It was a horrible experience for them. And They spoke about how that made them question, like, if there was something wrong with them or morally, like, yeah, flawed. And it's a really good question.
Angela Davis writes on the AirTalk page, "My issue with cancel culture is it can lead young people to spending a lifetime looking for reasons to be insulted. I've raised my son to understand most of life is lived in the nuanced gray areas as opposed to the figurative black and white extremes of cancel culture. Hence, it's best to pick your battles rather than simply write off everyone with whom you disagree." That's Angela writing on the AirTalk page, 866-893-KPECC, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Samantha, in Hermosa Beach, good to have you with us. What are your thoughts about this phenomenon?
Well, I'm calling because I'm a therapist and I work with a lot of young people, and I've worked with people who have been called out and those who are calling out or canceling others. And one thing that I've seen over and over again is feelings of isolation, alienation, and depression and anxiety on both sides, actually. When the focus is on an individual and blaming one particular person for saying or doing something rather than on sort of the structure and system that creates these individual acts or statements that cause so much harm and offense, sometimes that can result in everyone feeling alienated.
So what are, if you're working with a client who's a young person who has been singled out, had lost friends as a result of something, I mean, what, I know it's going to be individual with every young person, but are there some sorts of general things you ask them to consider as they go through this?
What I try to do, yeah, it depends on the person, but one thing I do try to do is help the person think about the systemic reasons as to why what happened and what the reaction as well. I think that there's an individual perspective and there's also a sociopolitical and structural perspective, and sometimes it can be helpful for young people to think in these ways rather than internalize and put so much blame on themselves or others.
Samantha, I appreciate it. Thanks very much. And thanks for the work you do with young people as a psychologist. Samantha in Hermosa Beach, 866-893-KPCC. David in Agoura Hills says, you know, the instance of the student playing the R. Kelly song, as a former educator, I think that was a teaching opportunity. If the student who was offended had gone to a teacher, maybe there could have been a discussion without there being a definitive answer. So everyone could have laid out what they thought about it. David, wouldn't that have been ideal? So the young woman at the school would talk about why it bothers her to have the R. Kelly song play with all the allegations of assault against him. The student could say, you know, look, this is why, despite that, I separate the music from the person, and you know, this would be an opportunity. Marissa in North Hollywood says, educating people is not thinking the same, especially talking about R. Kelly. I think you're minimizing it, showing your age, Larry. Marissa, no, I think R. Kelly, as to whether you play it or not, is a very subjective personal decision. I don't see how anyone could say it's wrong to play the music of someone who's a convicted mass murderer. I mean, when it comes to art, that is an individual decision that someone makes as to whether whatever terrible things a person has done means that you can't listen to the person's works. I mean, Wagner is a prime example from the world of opera. And to say, well, you know, you're just of an older generation if you think otherwise, that would be a sad thing if there's groupthink on the issue of art and whatever reprehensible things an individual has done or has been accused of. You can share your comments on the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. And this is the issue with Michael Jackson's music, of course, where some people can't listen to it anymore and other people compartmentalize it. Thank you so much, and share your comments on the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. And my thanks to New York Times Styles reporter Sanam Yar for joining us on AirTalk. Reminder, tomorrow in our 11 o'clock hour, it's a special statewide call-in. We join with public radio stations throughout California to talk about Proposition 187, 25 years later. How did the passage of that ballot measure, which stopped just just about all public services for those in California illegally. How did that change politics in the Golden State? Have a great afternoon.